ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमद्भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नाम्ने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि पश्चात्तरे सुतारिणे श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 16, Verse 15. Tasmad Isha Bhajantya Me Shreyas Chintaya Suvrata Hritsriyo Vrata Dhanan Supatnai Pahi Na Prabho Tasmad Isha Bhajantya Me Shreyas Chintaya Suvrata Krita Sriyo Krita Stanam Sapatnai Pahina Prabho Tasmad Isha Bhajantya Me Shreyas Chintaya Suvrata Krita Sriyo Krita Stanan Sapatnai Pahina Prabho Translation. Therefore, most gentle Lord, kindly favor your maidservant. We have now been deprived of our opulence and residence by our competitors, the demons. Kindly give us protection. Purport. Aditi, the mother of the demigods, appealed to Kasipa Muni to give the demigods protection. When we speak of the demigods, this also includes their mother. Text 16. The demons, our formidable, powerful enemies, have taken away our opulence, our beauty, our fame, and even our residence. Indeed, we have now been exiled and we are drowning in an ocean of trouble. O best of sages, best of all those who grant auspicious benedictions, please consider our situation and bestow upon my sons the benedictions by which they can regain what they have lost. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when Kasipa Muni was thus requested by Aditi, he slightly smiled. Alas, he said, how powerful is the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu by which the entire world is bound by affection for children. Purport. Kasipa Muni was surely sympathetic to his wife's affliction, yet he was surprised at how the whole world is influenced by affection. Kasipa Muni continued, what is this material body made of five elements? It is different from the spirit soul. Indeed, the spirit soul is completely different from the material elements from which the body is made. But because of bodily attachment, one is regarded as a husband or son. These illusory relationships are caused by misunderstanding. Purport, the spirit soul is certainly different from the body, which is a combination of five material elements. This is a simple fact, but is not understood unless one is spiritually educated. Kasipa Muni met his wife, Aditi, in the heavenly planets. But the same misconception extends throughout the entire universe and is also here on Earth. There are different grades of living entities, but all of them are more or less under the impression of bodily conception of life. In other words, all living entities in this material world are more or less devoid of spiritual education. The Vedic civilization, however, is based on spiritual education, and spiritual education is the special basis on which Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjuna. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna instructed Arjuna to understand that the spirit soul is different from the body. Dehinosmin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra namuhyati. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Unfortunately, this spiritual education is completely absent from modern human civilization. No one understands his real self-interest, which lies with the spirit soul, not with the material body. Education means spiritual education. To work hard in the bodily conception of life without spiritual education is to live like an animal. Nayam deho deha bhajam naloke kastan kaman ahate vidbujam ye. People are working so hard simply for bodily comforts without education regarding the spirit soul. Thus they are living in a very risky civilization. For it is a fact that the spirit soul has to transmigrate from one body to another. Without spiritual education, people are kept in dark ignorance and do not know what will happen to them after the annihilation of the present body. They are working blindly, and blind leaders are directing them. Anda yatandai upaniyamanas te pishatantram uludamni badha. A foolish person does not know that he is completely under the bondage of material nature, and that after death, material nature will impose upon him a certain type of body, which he will have to accept. He does not know that although in his present body he may be a very important man, he may next get the bodies of an animal or tree because of his ignorant activities in the modes of material nature. Therefore, the Krishna Consciousness Movement is trying to give the true light of spiritual existence to all living entities. This movement is not very difficult to understand, and people must take advantage of it, for it will save them from the risky life of irresponsibility. Translation, therefore, most gentle Lord, kindly favor your maidservant. We have now been deprived of our opulence and residence of our competitors, the demons. Kindly give us protection. So we see that Aditi was concerned about the plight of her good offspring, the devas. There's nothing wrong with that, of course, because we know that Krishna supports the devas against the asuras. But on the other hand, we see that Kasyapa Muni was remarking how there is such attachment to one's children, even on the higher planetary systems of Svarga Loka. One is affectionate towards one's children due to the illusory energy of Vishnu. So he has stated here how the due to our attachment, bodily attachment, we think in terms of husband and wife, son and daughter, etc. And these are all illusory relationships, that we take them of prime importance. On the other hand, we forget about our spiritual identity. So this may look a little harsh sometimes. We think that Vedic injunctions and Vedic philosophy looks a little bit impersonal in one sense, because they reject all these relationships of the material world. You shouldn't be affectionate towards your children, you shouldn't be affectionate towards your husband and wife. What are you supposed to do? Be like very inhuman people or whatnot. So the reason, of course, is because the normal relationships are based upon material like and dislike, and they're very strong, and they increase the ignorance or the illusion that we're in the material world. They create our bondage. And when we have these strong ties of affection or equally of repulsion, then we get more implicated in the material world. Our bondage increases by this. Because it is in proportion to our likes and our dislikes that we do activities. And these activities will bring us karma reactions. Heavier and heavier reactions, the more strong we have these attachments. So, therefore, it's all cause of ignorance. And therefore, the Bhagavatam especially condemns this type of desire and the activities based on these desires. Because, as we know, the Bhagavatam is pure and it's directing us towards the highest goal. And therefore, condemns all the lower goals in the process. We see, of course, in parts of the Vedic literature, this is not so. There, things are encouraged. And even Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also encourages to some extent. Says, worship the devatas, get your material needs fulfilled, and live happily in society. This is what Krishna advises Arjuna in chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Be happy in this material world and worship the devatas. But we see that later on he also rejects this. So the Vedic literatures are also like this. They encourage, on the one hand, development of family life. We have samskaras. Within the samskaras, blessings are given. Live happily together as man and wife, and you produce 10 children, and you become prosperous, and you have nice wealth, etc., etc. You know? All these sort of blessings are given. For prosperity, progeny, etc. And yet we see here Kashyapa Muni is saying, this is all nonsense, this is all maya, this is all illusion, this is leading back into the material world. So some parts of the Vedic literature, they do recommend things which look like attachment. And on the other hand, we find that Bhagavatam, because it's pointing towards the highest goal, it rejects everything. So there is some concession made for people who have attachments, and therefore these things are encouraged under certain conditions. So Vedic life is there, and attachment to family life is encouraged on the lower levels under certain conditions. I mentioned that the other day, that one does not artificially give up everything. One has to gradually detach himself, and therefore Lord Chaitanya himself did not recommend sudden renunciation, and he said the process should be gradual. And at the same time, we cannot without restriction indulge in sense gratification. Once we start the process of family life, etc., we cannot have no restrictions. We have to have some restriction there. But a certain extent of material life is allowed, with the idea that gradually it will become less and less. So therefore, there's different stages recommended in Vedic literature. So one starts with the karma kanda and fulfills one's material desires under certain conditions and restrictions. And as one gets more advanced, one is encouraged to do the activities, but don't really be attached to them. This is called nishkama karma. Karma is the performance of duties and supporting one's family and society. It's normal, you know, material life. But there's rules and regulations for that. And then ultimately, one should become nishkama, or free of desire, personal desire, in this process. So this is why it is encouraged, so that we can become gradually detached. And Bhagavatam, of course, is speaking to the elevated personalities. It is the purest knowledge, the highest knowledge, and therefore it's speaking to those who are qualified for this knowledge, and therefore it says, okay, give up everything. This is all nonsense. You cannot have these desires anymore. So with this in mind, Kashyapa Muni is also speaking, you know, this attachment to the children, how much maya it is. In other places we'll see in Bhagavatam that it says that to act according to qualification is a good quality, and to act not according to qualification is a bad quality. In other words, you have to act within your capacity. And if you are too ambitious, or you're not ambitious enough, both are bad. We should do our utmost of what we're capable. We should not be slack and do less, nor should we be over ambitious and do more than we're capable of. We should not attempt either. Rather, we should just situate ourselves what we're capable and find that process by which we can raise our standards gradually. So that is the normal recommendation in the Bhagavatam. And therefore, it says to the extent of the ideal, of course, is do not be attached to anything in the material world and only be attached to Krishna. But in the process of getting there, we're starting at the bottom. So therefore, we have to gradually detach ourselves. If we don't have much qualification, we have to gradually detach ourselves from the material world more and more. This process is a gradual thing. So in this way, we develop ourselves. So this is the recommended process to follow. And so Bhagavatam says that to the extent that one has material attachment, to that extent one should follow the rules of Varnashram. In other words, one should partake of material life to the extent one is attached, but follow some rule and regulation there, of the rules and regulations of Varnashram. And then gradually by doing that and performing devotional service, one will get detachment from it all. So therefore, of course, the Varnashram system supports all of these things which Kasyapa Muni is here condemning and saying it's all Maya. So therefore we have even in bhakti and Vaishnava culture, though the goal is absolute surrender to Krishna, we also have the all types of people admitted to the process of bhakti. So we have the householder or the grihasta, and we have the renounced person, the sannyasi or the vanaprastha and the brahmachari. We have all types of people who can participate in the process of bhakti. And of course, even beyond the Varnashram system, people who are not in the Varnashram system, either they're overqualified, being Paramahamsas, or they're underqualified, being Mlechas and Chandalas, etc., they're also allowed to participate. So there's no restriction there upon beginning the process and in proceeding to practice. We should understand, however, that the ultimate goal is there. And that means that there's 100% dedication to the interests of the Supreme Lord, and there's zero consideration of one's own needs. This is the position of prema. And that looks a little bit drastic and maybe a little bit frightening, that we have to give up all of our own needs and consideration of ourselves. But when we understand that actually our self is spiritual and it doesn't have the needs that we're thinking of now, then what is the problem? The spirit soul does not need food, does not get thirsty, does not get sick, does not get old, and does not die. So all the needs we're thinking of in this material world do not apply to the soul at all. So if one is spiritually developed and understands one as a soul, then naturally these needs of the material world disappear. That doesn't mean, of course, that we deliberately stop the body from functioning after we become pure devotees. But these things become not very attractive. They're not sources of pleasure, nor are they sources of attachment for us at that stage. So as Kasyapa Muni has pointed out here, actually we're all moving in ignorance in this material world, cultivating desires, needs, affection, relationships, families, etc. But it is all with the identification with bodies. And therefore it is ignorance. Because it obstructs our understanding that we're a soul, not a body. And the two things are very different. The body is made up of material elements which are not conscious at all. And they don't do anything on their own. They have no power to do anything on their own. It's called jada or dull. They're changing all the time. And they combine and then they separate. The soul, on the other hand, is chit. It's a conscious entity with the capacity for knowledge and for action and for desire. It is eternal. It is unchanging. It is non-destructible. So it is completely different from matter. And yet, we have the soul making this big mistake and thinking, I am the body. There's a big jump to make, actually, because it's so different. It's a very different conception completely, because they're so different, opposites. One is conscious, one is unconscious. One is eternal, one is temporary. One is not subject to birth and death, the other is subject to birth and death. Yet we make this identity. That's called ignorance. So, of course, for the materialists, they will think this is nonsense. False identity doesn't exist because there is no other identity. This is the conviction we have. There is no soul. We're so strongly identifying with the material body, we're convinced there's nothing else around. There's nothing else there. So that is so-called intelligent people, materialists and scientists and whatever, that's their conviction. There's no such thing as a soul. Only body exists. So this is from the Vedic point of view. This is the ultimate ignorance. This is condemned. This is completely ignorant. This ignorance is there because of all of this absorption in desires, fulfilling desires, attachments. This is the problem. The more we have the desires and the more we get attached, the more we think only in terms of body. Why? Because body means, attachment means attachment to body. Basically that's what it is. We have an attachment, it's attachment on the bodily level. So therefore it increases our ignorance. This is all right for animals or plants. It doesn't matter. Plants, of course, are quite unconscious, but animals a little bit conscious, but it is only as a human being that we're capable of distinguishing between soul and body and seeing the difference. This is what the human being can do. That's the special nature of the human being. He can do this, and the animal and the plant cannot do this. Yeah? So this is a special purpose of human consciousness and intelligence to make this, start making this distinction, and then based on that, developing ourselves spiritually. And if we don't do that, then we're like the animals. And if we continue to be like that, then we deserve to be an animal. We become an animal. So therefore, as human beings, we have to be very, very careful. We have to learn to be a little introspective about what we're doing in life and begin to develop. If we examine everybody in this material world and you ask them, what are you trying to do with your life? Nobody has any goal, ultimately, except maybe to get a house and to support themselves and to live for so long and eat and do whatever. That's about it. I want to survive, basically. And get a little happiness. And what is the happiness? It is something very unimportant. Something which will disappear very quickly. And that's about the ultimate goal of most people in the material world. That is how ignorant they are. So that is why in the Purport Prabhupada is lamenting this position of people in the material world. It's a big waste. And There was no attempt of anyone to educate people. Of course, people, it's our fault in one sense because we're so attached and whatever, we're doing this. But there is a possibility of getting out of it by proper knowledge. If we get proper knowledge, then we got some clue. Of course, we may or may not accept the knowledge, but chances are maybe we will. So at least the exposure to proper knowledge should be there and tell us, no, this is not so. You have to understand you're not the body at all, you're spirit soul. And that's exactly what Krishna does in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. He tells Arjuna, look, you're not a body, you're a soul. The first teaching. So this is the beginning of real knowledge. And Prabhupada often laments that, you know, in our society, in our educational system, nobody is giving this knowledge at all. We have so much knowledge, but ultimately it's useless because it's only going to support the material body or to give pleasure to the material body, one or the other, ultimately. And this only increases our bodily attachment and our ignorance. So the whole purpose of human life is frustrated because of this. So because Krishna has planned out the whole of creation and the direction for the different species of life for the human being, he's made it such that ultimately you cannot escape becoming spiritual in one sense, because no matter how hard you try in the material world, you will never be happy. You want happiness, but you'll never get it. And because we are conscious entities, eventually we should become conscious of that fact. There must be some other way of becoming happy, because this isn't working. So that's the point that Krishna is trying to make in the material world to the human beings. The only problem is, of course, it takes a long time. And even the human being who's so intelligent, it takes him a long time to learn any little lesson. Very, very difficult for him to learn anything new. Yeah? In spite of so much experience, we still don't learn. So we are slow learners, so that's the problem. So therefore we stay in the material world for billions and billions of years and life cycles and Brahma before we get a clue of what's going on. And the Lord is always trying to help, and he's giving the knowledge, he's coming as avatar, he's sending devotees, he's got the Vedic literature there to help us, he's presenting the different literatures, he's making it simple by having the Puranas written every Kali Yuga, etc., and Mahabharata and all these works, and presenting it in simpler form, giving us Bhagavad Gita all the time. But how many people take to it, actually? Very, very few. Which means that it takes us a lot of experience before we do become frustrated with the position and understand this is not happiness, this is, you know, there's something wrong here. But that's the ultimate purpose of human life. If the purpose is not fulfilled, then you're never happy. If the Lord has given us a goal in human life and we don't fulfill that, then there's no possibility of being happy in any other way. So it is natural, of course, that since we are the soul, we're not the body, it's very difficult to be happy by satisfying the body. Just like you have a body and then you have clothes and so many things to put around the body. But if you try to feed the clothes instead of feeding the body, the body is going to survive. It'll never be satisfying. So in the same way, the example is given of the bird in the cage. So the foolish man doesn't recognize the bird in the cage, and he's attracted to the cage, and he decorates the cage and polishes it and spends a lot of money on it, and he doesn't have any regard for the bird inside the cage, and the bird will die. So the same with us. We can do so much things for the body, etc., but ultimately the soul is never satisfied in this position. The only peculiar thing here is that the soul actually is the whole cause of everything. We have to blame the soul for everything, ultimately, for this false identification, everything. And he's a sufferer also. So, therefore, it takes a lot of work for the soul to get out of this position and fix up his identity. since he's the cause of the misidentity in the first place. So the basic idea is the desire has to change. Once the desire changes, the soul's desire, and then everything else changes. So basically the whole problem is to direct yourself away from our enjoyment in the material world, which gives rise to false identification and then actions with the material body. This idea that I want to enjoy, this is the seed of our in the material world. So there's two ways of getting rid of that. One is no enjoyment. That's just cut out desire completely. This is the process of jnana, and it leads to moksha and impersonal liberation. The other process is not to deny desire at all, but rather redirect it and have the desire related to a worthy object, the Supreme Lord. So direct desire towards God instead of for ourself. So let us try to let's desire something. So let us desire not for ourselves. Let us desire for Supreme Lord. Why the Supreme Lord? Because the Supreme Lord is the perfect spiritual being. That's why. So it is natural that we should direct ourselves there to this naturally perfect person. If we have desire, direct it towards the perfect person, not towards somebody imperfect. So that is why the natural object for the jiva is the Supreme Lord, to direct himself there. And so how is the desire different? Because the desire is the desire to please the Lord, not the desire to get pleasure for myself. And therefore, when we do that, automatically the identification with the material body, the attachment to things of the material world, ignorance, all these things disappear. When we direct ourselves with unmotivated devotion towards the Supreme Lord, then automatically ignorance is destroyed. Ignorance, desire, karma, all this is destroyed by directing ourselves towards the Supreme Lord. Because they go in opposite directions, they're opposite things. And when we eradicate the seed of our material life in the form of desire for enjoyment, and we replace that with giving enjoyment to Krishna, then naturally all these problems disappear. So this is the solution to our predicament in the material world. And as long as we don't recognize that, we'll try to solve the problem in different ways. By material arrangement, we can try through science. If we don't have enough food and everything, then we try for some material arrangement. This is how we do it. Then we're satisfied materially. Then somehow mentally we're dissatisfied. So they make all sorts of arrangements for that, how to pacify us mentally, so that we get all sorts of stimulus for our mind, entertainment or something like that. And if that doesn't work, then we try other things, and then we try relationships. So let us become liberated in our desires, in our relationships. And then we have things like free love and free sex and all sorts of things like that. So we can experiment in all sorts of ways to, you know, satisfy the body and then satisfy the mind. And those two levels. And then satisfy the intellect. If we're a little, you know, intellectual, then we satisfy the intellect with all sorts of knowledge, material knowledge. But we see ultimately, because we're missing the point. We're not a body at all, nor a mind, nor an intelligence. We're a soul. So therefore, we miss the whole point here. By satisfying these things, still, you don't get your happiness. Because happiness actually is coming from the soul. The desire for happiness is coming from the soul, but we're putting it into the body and trying through the body and the mind to get the happiness. It's not going to work. So it's the soul actually that has to become happy, but cannot become happy by trying for itself. Is immediately identifies with the body for that. And then we get to all sorts of problems. So, We have to understand our spiritual nature. This is the whole goal of human life. And, of course, there's different processes, as I said, starting from Karmakanda and then Jnana and then finally up to Bhakti. So, for those that cannot do Bhakti, then people are given gradual process, all these other things. But, generally in Kali Yuga, other processes are not recommended. Better directly take to the process of Bhakti, devotion. And this will surpass all the other stages, all the other, instead of going gradually, we can go through Bhakti itself from the beginning all the way to the end. And this is considered the best process for us. It's the quickest and most effective process. So, therefore, ultimately, the position is, yes, we have to get rid of every other attachment except attachment to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, attachment to sons and daughters and husband and wife and friends and relatives, all this is ultimately Maya in that sense. And if it's related to Krishna, fine. So in the material world, because we do have attachments, etc., then we're recommended at this stage. We can't suddenly artificially cut them off. That doesn't work either. They'll spring up in another way. So therefore, rather we try to at least connect everything to the Supreme Lord. That much we do. To make it favorable for devotional development. That's called Yukta Vairagya. So within that, we try to direct everything towards devotional service, or at least so it is not unfavorable and obstructs our progress. We try to prevent that. Okay, any questions? Scientists believe they do have absolute reference in one sense, I suppose. That is their observation and things like that. Though ultimately we see it's faulty. But that's it. Their conclusion is the best we can do. And it's better than hypothesizing or using intuition or anything else. So therefore they say, what I see, this is real. And if everybody else sees it, then we'll say it's real. So it's based upon the consensus of so many people can see this, therefore it is real, therefore it's absolute. that's their idea of absolute. But we know that even that falls down, that breaks apart, that idea breaks apart. Because the smaller we get in science, the more weird it becomes. And when you get down to atoms and protons and neutrons and electrons, then observation itself becomes very questionable. And the very particles we think are particles are not particles at all. They're dimensionless clouds of energy somewhere or other, which can't even be located. So the whole thing's become very strange ultimately. What is matter and what is real? I mean, so science gets stuck like this also. And ultimately scientists become philosophers then, you know, in quantum mechanics. They become more philosophical about the whole thing. And they're trying to discuss matter, but they have to become a philosopher. The whole matter becomes very strange suddenly, which is very interesting because we see that it's matter is not what we think it is after all. It is illusory. It's not what we think it is after all. So it's not so absolute. It's not so absolute. It's interesting, of course, that ultimately in science that they have to, in quantum physics, they've somehow, consciousness seems to be involved there and they cannot escape it because the observer is necessary for the experiment and the experiment is real, so therefore the observer must be real. The conscious entity also has to be involved in the experiment. So when we go up into the big thing, when we talk about that's for, you know, small things, watching electrons go in their experiments, go back and forth or whatever, and measuring them, then the conscious entity also affects the results. And you have to consider them as part of the experiment, otherwise it's useless. So
Then when you get up in the big thing, then they go from small things, they go off and they have theories about the whole universe and about the creation and the Big Bang and all this sort of thing. But even there, then they need an observer. Somebody outside there, a conscious entity somewhere out there also, for the big thing. But they don't want to accept God there also. So that's why, you know, science is also stuck now. They don't know how to conclude everything because they don't want to accept conscious entities and don't want to accept God. But nevertheless, their theories don't work either unless they do accept it. So they're trying to think of some other solution, and they can't find one. So they've been trying for the last 100 years to do that, to solve the problem. But they haven't come up with a solution yet. Should.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it's socially unacceptable to say you're unhappy with your material situation. People don't go around and say good day, they don't say, well, look, this is a miserable place. They go, oh, yes, I'm okay. Regardless of the situation, they encourage the death. So it seems in the propaganda of the material world makes it also very difficult to get out of that. Maybe there is obviously some psychology involved in keeping happy and moving, that's fair enough, there's no admittance of, actually this isn't a very good situation.
Well, it's obvious that no politician or no country can start saying we're suffering. Otherwise they'll fall out of power real quick. So everybody has to be under illusion we're doing very nicely. And that's basically what governments have to do. They have to give you assurance that everything is fine all the time, isn't it? And to do that, they have to distract you in so many ways.
I guess if they don't, they said the economies will
fall apart. Yeah, they're so miserable they won't want to work. There'll be no motivation for working. Well, that's of course the whole idea of in religion itself, they have all this type of thing, you know. Well, we can't tell people about this or that because if we do, then they won't be motivated anymore to do anything. Just like in with the idea of reincarnation and karma and next life, the Christians decide we shouldn't tell everybody this because if we tell them, then they'll be lax in this lifetime and won't work because they got another chance next lifetime. And they'll be lazy, so we'll just say there's only one lifetime, you got to do it now. And so they're trying to get people to, you know, work now rather than do anything else.
Well, even Christian Peter says kind of disturbing. Confusing.
Yeah.
They don't have any other platform.
Yeah.
So if you suddenly say, well, this is waste of time.
Yeah. Well, that's why we have the gradual processes there, karmakanda, to gradually to get people out of that situation rather than suddenly. And therefore even in devotional service we don't immediately pull everybody out either. So we say it's a gradual process, and wherever you are, you started that process, you know, that thing where the grahasta or whatever, you start there and you work away at gradually, you don't suddenly get out like that. So we also recommend a gradual process. Nevertheless, truth is truth, and at least philosophically we have to present, you know, that there's a soul and there's a body. We cannot say no, it's all nice in the material world and that's it, you know. We got to tell them there has to be some goal to get out, but we'll make it gradual and that's all. So we don't say give up everything immediately. Krishna in that sense says he's saying don't tell everybody to stop activity. That's his idea, because they won't be able to do it anyway, you know, simply disturb everybody else in the process. So anyway, the society is like that. It wants to preserve the status quo at best and not disturb people too much. But, you know, ultimately, that's not a good policy in one sense. Not to have a real goal for anybody. And if they just have a material goal, maybe they're thinking that'll satisfy everybody. We will give them promises that, you know, you can be happy and, you know, you get enough food and you get a nice house. That promise has been there for, you know, they fulfill that also in some countries, like, you know, socialistic states or in Sweden or something. And you get everything you need and nobody suffers in one sense. But we find that doesn't work either, because people still suffer after they got all of that.
Totally neutral point of view. You're not allowed to present any culture as the creator electronic, et cetera, in schools, every activity. Online, you can't impinge on their culture or their idea. They should be able to do what they think is
A neutral stance.
That makes it even more serious.
That's got a plus and a minus, of course. That takes the prejudice away from, you know, you have to be a Christian or else, you know. So in that sense, it's okay. But the other point is that makes everybody just wishy-washy, and they don't believe anything.
Isn't the best example ultimately if we see saintly ascetics actually being happy in a renounced thing, then we see this is the better thing in the end.
Yeah, example is the best. Example is the best, let's say, inspiration for everybody, actually. Oh, that person's happy, so maybe I should do like that and be happy. But of course, then the idea, what is happiness also? That's a little bit of an intuitive thing, isn't it? Some people will appreciate that as happiness, some people will say it's foolishness, you know.
For myself, upon my association, this is my happiness. I don't know anything else.
Well, that is why Sadhu Sangha is the most emphasized thing, and the mercy of devotees is the most powerful influence to change a person. And Sadhu Sangha or Asat Sangha, these are very powerful influences on everyone. And therefore, the more devotees are in the world, the better, we can say. Okay. Hare Krishna.